This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Hello and welcome to Long Shots Golf Betting Podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidley coming to Bidley.
Yeah, Bidley.
Woo! You go away for a week and like I forget your name, buddy. I love this. Like Kelly coming back in.
Out of
like,
sight, I mean, out of mind.
Yeah, Kelly seriously. Kelly Bidlin coming to you here for the FedEx St. Jude start of the playoffs, but before we get to that, as always, guys, this podcast absolutely free. So do appreciate you hitting that subscribe button. And if you want to go in and give us a rating and a review, we appreciate that too. Unless it's like 3 stars or lower, and then keep that shit to yourselves, you know, so we're not worried about that at all. So before we get into the FedEx St. Jude, Wes, let's go ahead. We'll give you a nice little golf clap with the Aaron Rye. That being said, for the people out there that had Grazerman tickets, yes. My heart is breaking into 1,000 pieces for you because that was some of the saddest stuff I've watched on a golf course in quite some time. I expect me to 4-putt a par 3. I expect me to maybe even 3-putt from 3 feet. I do not expect a guy who is heading towards his first PGA Tour victory ever to have that happen to him and then fall out of the lead and then eventually lose. But Wes, that's exactly what happened with Grazerman. And I mean, you just hate it for the kid. He had an awesome Korn Ferry season last year, gets onto the PGA Tour, was really playing well on the PGA Tour. It looked like he was going to get his first victory and kind of like, hey, this is the payoff for a really good rookie season. And then not even just the back nine, just the end of the back nine just fell apart for him. And guy, you just feel for the kid for sure.
Yeah, and Grazerman, by the way, was coming off a runner-up. Now, he had to go really low. He came from the back on Sunday at the 3M and was the leader in the clubhouse. Johnny Vegas, fortunately for me, holds on for the win. But, yeah, look, he holds out for eagle. He gets 21 under par. So his scorecard goes 2 and then 8. A snowman on the next one as he hits it out of bounds. And then, oh, by the way, still retook the lead because he birdied the par 5. And then, as you mentioned, 4-putt on the par 3. Aaron Rye hits an absolute bullet on 18 and makes a birdie 2-shot victory. So, look, if you look at the numbers for Aaron Rye, strokes gained approach led the field tee to green, led the field fairway proximity, second for scrambling, third in GIR, 7th for accuracy. And that's what we talked about last week, Matt. It's like, this guy's a fairway and a green finder. And that's what you have to be here. So he lived up to the formula, but the circumstances obviously much different, as we mentioned with Max Grazerman. But nevertheless, both those guys, Grazerman, by the way, shot 60 in the second round. Both those guys in the top 70, though, in the FedEx Cup standings, where we're going to start the playoffs this week.
Yeah, I felt bad for Grazerman, especially since I feel like the broadcasts never do this, but they threw up like a graphic. This was like, this had to have been 2 holes before the quad. And it was like the graphic of his recent results. And I was like, you know what? I feel like I've seen him up there on some leaderboards recently, but I really hadn't realized how great of a stretch he had put together. And then it was, just like yo, he's going to cruise to a win. Oh no, falls apart completely. And then you have the olds getting involved. Like, I want to say good on Billy Horschel. He was pretty cool with Aaron Rye down the stretch there. And then Matt
Billy Horschel was cheering harder for him than I was, and I had money on him.
he's a hard guy to figure out. I don't know if it's the last time I'm going to bring up Billy Horschel, because I don't know if you guys caught that Matt Vincenzi article about apparently Horschel would like the TV broadcast to stop talking about all the money when we get into the FedEx Cup playoffs, which – I know I can at least speak for Matt. We've been going crazy about the opposite for years of like, why don't you talk about this on normal broadcasts? Right. It might actually make outsiders more interested in your sport. But no, God forbid you talk about the money.
Yeah, you're not playing for fun out there, buddy. You're playing for the money. Yeah. You know, like, this is what this is all
about.
And
that's the whole point of this FedEx Cup playoffs. Yeah. That's why they give you these updates. Let's update the FedEx Cup standings when it's like March and nobody cares. But that's the whole deal for it, to keep people engaged, is that there's a bunch of money. And look, FedEx is paying a lot of money for that sponsorship entitlement, so they want that mentioned all the time.
Absolutely. To put a bow on it, Kelly, you mentioned Kuchar and his weird decision to make everybody have to come back on Monday morning to make the tournament official. You've heard weird stories about Kuchar come out on the tour over the years, as it is anyway. Yeah. Obviously, none of us, like, you know him personally or anything, so we don't really know. But you've heard these weird things about him. There's, you know, very mixed deals about stuff that he said about, like, oh, well, I wanted to try to set an example for Grazerman, who, you know, maybe he would say he didn't want to play anymore. Then you hear the other stuff about him saying that some of the other people saying, well, I heard rumors that he was actually just pissed off at how slow Aaron Rye plays, which, by the way, we joke about how slow Billy Horschel plays and Brian Harmon. Aaron Rye's right up there with him. Like, is like painful to watch play. It is like,
he's got two gloves he's got to reset. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. It is not good for the viewing audience. I'll put it that way. Like, some of these guys, they got to do something about that next year. They got to get some of these guys to speed up. I'm sure you guys saw the memes from Brian Harmon over the weekend where they ran the entire 400 in the Olympics before he actually teed off. Like, they showed him stand up. They showed him get to his ball on the tee box, and then it like fired the 400, and they ran the entire 400 by the time that he was before he actually hit the ball in the tee box, man, or whatever.
That's great. Like, I did not see that.
Yeah,
that
just stuff awesome. Like that. It's just like, come on, guys. Like, we gotta, this is still a viewing. Your money is still from TV, you know, by the way. Like, you know, these sponsors are paying for the TV rights to be on there and like get eyeballs on their product and stuff. And it's like, you cannot make this painful for guys to watch. But the Kuchar decision was odd. I don't really know what to make of it. I think he was just being a dick because, I think he got pissed off about something somewhere along the way.
And
because
he hid in the group, obviously. Yeah. And I guess. So,
what was that? I was just going to ask, what was the weirdest part to you guys about the whole Kuchar experience? Because to me, it wasn't even him finishing on Monday. It was the drive when, like, come on, man. Even if someone was waving you on, like, we saw a camera shot of like, hey, there's the group in the middle of the freaking fairway and we could see them on the tee box. Like, you can't tell me you can't see those guys. And then I thought, like, fine, you want to quit? Cool. But like, what's like you have to hang out with the rest of the group until they're finished. Like, why wouldn't you just finish this up anyways, man? Like, what are we doing here? Those are the two weirdest parts to me. Like,
He's had some weird moments too. Remember when he won Mayakoba back a few years ago when he tipped that caddy $5,000 and made $1.3 million, by the way. Usually it's 10% for wins for caddies and about 7% for top 10 and 5-7 for just the normal winnings plus whatever your base salary is. I think this was even a local caddy too, and gave him $5,000 on $1.3 million. Like, that's like when people leave the change at the counter.
Yeah.
You know, when like if somebody bets $100 to win 90-90, doesn't bet the juice right. at the counter, and they just go ahead and leave like a couple quarters, like, thanks, buddy.
What did that happen to you a time or two, Wes?
Might have.
Is that coming from ticket writing experience there? Yeah. Just bet 110 next time, asshole.
Self and others, yes.
You know what, Kelly? You know what? Let's bring the money back up here, and then we'll move on to the FedEx here. But
yeah.
I would have been okay with Kuchar just going, hey, it was getting dark, and if I bogeyed that hole, I was going to lose $100,000. Like, I would have dropped, like, whatever or something. If he'd have told me I quit because I wanted to stay where I was at because it was worth $100,000 to me, then I'm okay. Fine. Don't make up the bullshit answer of, like, whatever. Like, oh, I was trying to set an example for the young kid and whatever. And all
totally
like,
with no, you.
Just say, hey, if I bogeyed that hole, it was going to cost me $100,000. And I don't want to lose $100,000. So there you have it. You know,
yeah, there was some outrage on Twitter over that where it was like, yeah, $100,000 or I forget what number I was seeing thrown out there, something like that, though. And it's like, yeah, he's made $58 million on the tour. I don't care. I'm still with you, Matt. Like, still, if he had just said it's about the money, it's still his money. I can't tell him what this is like. This is like us sitting at the poker table and yelling at someone, right? Like, we can yell at them all they want to move faster or whatever. They ain't going to be put on the clock by us. They can do whatever the hell they want with their money. This is Kuchar's money, but come out and say that, man. Say it.
Six figures is six figure. Like, you're unless you are worth a B, like a billion, like unless your thing has B in front of it, like that six figures is six figures, man. Like, I don't care what anybody has to say. So
that's a brand new car for Matt Kuchar Jr. You know,
exactly.
I'm assuming whatever. He has a kid. I don't really know what his kid's name is.
Probably is, you know, whatever or something like that. So Shooter Kuchar probably. He probably Shooter named him Kuchar. Shooter. Yeah, he probably named him Shooter or something like
or
that.
Or just Kuch. You know? Kuch Kuchar.
Kuch Kuchar or something, you know, whatever it is. But yeah, anyway, we'll put a bow on that as we move into the playoffs here. And as I said, headed to Tennessee, TPC Southwind, the top 70 players now move on. And in this reduced field, Wes, it is a no cut event. So only the 50 highest in the point standings will move on to next week, but what are we looking at here as we head to Southwind?
Yeah, TPC Southwind, of course, probably one of the harder TPC courses. Usually they're all pretty scoreable, and Southwind is too. But there's a lot of landmines here on this par 70 of 7243. It is Zoysia Fairways, much like they're going to get at East Lake in 2 weeks at the Tour Championship, and that grass a little bit bouncier in the fairway. But these are very narrow fairways too, about 29 yards wide. So what some of the more narrow ones on tour. 2.5 inches Bermuda rough can be kind of tricky and unpredictable and really kind of, you know, hang on that club if you got to pitch it out of there. So, but you know, you want to hit the fairways here like you always want to do, but especially here. Greens are Champion Bermuda, pretty easy greens, actually 12 on the stem. So that's about average speed, but they're small, 4,300 square feet on average. And also you have a lot of water danger holes here, 11 to be exact. So people would think that TPC Sawgrass would have the most water because there's a lot of water on that course. And of course there's the Island Green at 17, but TPC Southwind, you get the most water balls on tour by a country mile, really, on this course. So, you know, this has been Memphis has been a staple on the PGA Tour since like the 1950s, I believe. And, you know, this is the third time it's called the FedEx St. Jude Championship, where it's a playoff event. I think many remember years ago where it was like the regular tour stop in June and just a typical event, which had kind of an okay field. But now this is a playoff event. So, you know, you've seen some variance in the scoring, not really so much the last 2 years. 15 under par has been the winning score. Zalatoris won in 2022. Lucas Glover in the playoff over Patrick Cantlay last year, 15 under par, 260.
Kelly, as we look at the odds board here, no shock. It is Scottie Scheffler, your gold medal winner over at the Olympics, that is your favorite, plus 330, 350, actually, the best number it looks like out there. On him, Xander sitting somewhere in that 7.5 to 8 range. Rory is sitting in that 9 to 10 range. Morikawa's sitting about 12 across the board there. Fleetwood. Then we kind of get that bigger jump in the odds with some of these guys as to where they're sitting on the odds boards. But you know, that's kind of the main dudes, and then we get into that next tier of the guys on the odds board, and then some attractive names, I think, along the kind of 30-ish, 35-ish range and stuff. And then, you know, we get out into the longer odds of guys that are really good players, quality players, but in a field like this, in an event that means so much, we do have to question win equity on some of these guys, I think, as we talk through all of this. As you looked at the odds board, Kelly, was there anything that just kind of jumped out at you? I mean, listen, 350 on Scotty. We talked about this before at some of these other deals where it's like, hey, short field, what's the win equity for some of the guys at the bottom? You know, I don't know. 350 is probably pretty good on Scottie Scheffler, you know?
Yeah, it's probably about right on. I honestly, the first reaction I had was I wanted to see what that Scheffler number was just because of the conversation we had on this podcast before the Olympics. And look, I know there was others that talked about it as well, where it was, you know, you compare a tournament like this and that, right? And you're talking about 70 man fields, no cut, and this is a way, way, way stronger field. And you were getting a longer number on Scheffler in the Olympics. And I think it was a missed opportunity by all of us here. We mentioned it. We said, I remember saying, hey, I can't blame anybody who wants to bet Scheffler. And that was definitely a missed opportunity, especially since at least me and Wes ended up on Rahm, and that kind of sucked. I think that was interesting. That first jumped out to me. I think when we get to our cards, I only made one outright bet. I'll get right to it. It was back to the well with Colin Morikawa. I have a feeling I'll be doing that here for the rest of the season. I think he's the best player on tour that has not won this year. I think his number is still in a range. And look, he's a guy we know that can win. So he's still in a number range that I think is very bettable right now. But the win equity thing is a major question this week, Matt. And I do think that it kept me from going too far down the board. And I think that there might be, for me, actually, I don't really expect that I'm going to add anything in that mid-range. There might be one or two flyer longer shots that I'll add because we are talking about a 70-man field. And I'll use him as an example. I didn't bet him yet this week, but Keegan Bradley's like 100 to 1, you know, I mean, like you start talking about some of these names that are in the, you know, triple digits in a 70 man field, with no cut. There's only, you know, you know, you have a couple right things go or a couple things go your way. Some couple guys find the water, you know, with all the water that's on this course. You never know. A long shot could be in play at the end of it. But man, I really do think with how well and how consistent Scheffler, Xander, Rory, Morikawa, those four in particular have been over these past few months now, it's just, I think it's tough for me to sink too much into the outright market this week.
Well, Wes, I went to the expert on everything, and I asked ChatGPT what they thought about Scottie Scheffler's odds this week. And if I were to give ChatGPT a hypothetical $100, what they would do. And ChatGPT said, if I were hypothetically placing a bet with $100 on the FedEx St. Jude's Championship, I consider placing a wager on a player who's shown strong recent form and has a solid track record on the season. Given the context, I might choose someone like Scottie Scheffler. They have been consistently impressive on the season. So ChatGPT's no idiot. ChatGPT's like, you're gonna give me a free 100? I'm putting it on Scotty Scheffler.
Let's do the ChatGPT play of the week every week now, please, because it's just gonna be Scotty Scheffler every week. Because they're not considering the odds or anything like that. That's great. Yeah,
is that like the bot that humans and I had in the Circa Friday Football Invitational? But I think ChatGPT might be a little bit ahead of the game on that one. But I digress. Hold on.
I might pick someone who's had strong recent form like Scotty Scheffler. Like, yeah, I bet you would, ChatGPT.
And that's the one black mark, by the way, on Scotty Scheffler is, look, he's had 5 appearances here, and his best finish is 14th. Now, you don't want to put too much into that, but he's never, like, really been in the mix here. But he's also having one of the great years, at least in recent years, on the PGA Tour.
I will tell you something that I don't know how much we're going to get into this, so I'll bring it up now, and I think I screwed up already, is I made a bet. Every year when we get this at this point in the year, you get the certain shops, not every shop hangs it, but you get the to win the FedEx Cup market as well, right? So I think that in years past, it's made a lot of sense to, okay, if you're looking at basically whoever you're looking at to bet outright this week, if you think they're winning this week with quadruple the FedEx points that you're getting in these first two events, it makes sense to add on that market. I did that with Colin Morikawa this week before I realized fully how far behind basically all these guys are behind Scheffler and Shoffley in the FedEx Cup points race. So even if Morikawa wins this week, he will still be well behind Scottie Scheffler. So that is something that I know we have preached in the past and brought this up in the past. I already screwed that up this year. I'm just going to throw that PSA out there for everybody that I don't know if I'd be betting into that market at all unless you're looking at Scheffler or Shoffley.
And you've also got that starting strokes market at the Tour Championship, right, like we always had, where the leader starts at 10 under par and all that. So that gives them such an advantage that is so hard to come back from. I think Rory did it one year where he was like 5 back to start the event, but he's so great at Eastlake, he was able to make that up. So, yeah, I don't really bet that market because it's so hard now.
This is where your standings are. Scheffler with 5,900 points, okay, almost 6,000 points. Xander Schauffele is over 1,900 points behind him. The winner of this will get 2,000 points. Rory McIlroy is third. He's 3,400 points behind Scottie Scheffler, and Morikawa is 3,500. So it is. I think this year you can just, unless you're betting one of those top two guys, forget about that. Probably even Shoffley doesn't make any sense to bet. If you're just betting Scheffler this week.
Do you get like 1,500 for the win now or 2,000? I forget.
It's 2,000.
It is 2,000 now for the win. So, yeah, theoretically, you know, you can make it up, but you pretty much, I think, if you're
you gotta beat Scheffler twice. Yeah, I mean, you gotta beat Scheffler and Shoffley multiple times, basically. Yeah, to get them.
Which hasn't been easy to do on the PGA Tour.
What if they actually did the starting strokes just based off of actually how many points and stuff you had? So instead of just being at set, that Scotty just started at 20 under or something like that.
Like, it's just like being like 12 or 13 under.
Like, it is like Scotty goes out and he's already 20 under, and like the last guy in is sitting at like even par. It's like you're 20 strokes down to start. That'd be so great.
Well, that's what it's all.
great ideas this pod.
That's right? What it's all about for these guys, yeah. though, because you make the tour championship, you make that top 30. Those are major championship exemptions if you're not already in. So there's still things to play for those guys that have no chance to win this FedEx Cup unless they like sweep all the events. Like the guy in 55th does not have a chance to win, but he's obviously playing. It's like, can I jump into the 30 because it goes 70? And as you mentioned, Matt, 50 in Castle Pines for the BMW, and then the top 30 down in Eastlake at Atlanta.
And big time money in all of these.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, yeah, it's even just finishing inside that top 50. I mean, these are big time paychecks they're getting these next few weeks.
Obviously, we love talking golf here on Long Shots, guys. It is heading into football season. So over at VSiN.com, we have the two betting guides out right now. If you're a VSiN Pro subscriber, you can take home the NFL betting guide. You can take home the college football betting guide, where personally, for my money, is the most value you possibly get for anything that we do over at VSiN. There are 134 different collegiate teams that are broken down in that thing. And trust me, you don't have the time to go in and do that on your own. So we've done that for you over at VSiN.com. If you want to become a VSiN Pro subscriber, we got specials running over there as well. VSiN.com/subscribe. So guys, we go into each and every week as we talk about building our models. My approach this week was I did a mixed condition model in which I put the baseline, two different ones, in which I put the baseline at 36 rounds and then the baseline at 50 rounds. And then I'm able to go in and blend inside of the baseline of 36 and 50, some emphasis on some either more recent statistics or more pulled out statistics. Again, shout out to Rick and all these guys, you know, the guys who are BetSports and stuff like that with their models, who where you're able to go in and it's like, sure, the baseline for all stats is X amount of rounds, but you can add in, you know, stats for last 24, last 12, and it basically blends all that together. And so you're kind of trying to get the well-rounded picture, which I think it'll take here going in if somebody's going to honestly try and knock off Scotty or Xander in this tournament. So that's kind of where I went with
I did with way more of that this week as well, Matt, than what I typically do. I do think that we're at hopefully we do a good enough job talking about this. I think we do, as far as what time ranges we're looking at, you know, and when we're building our models. But I do think you just realizing what's going on in the golf world of what's gone on the past month or two, right? You've got Olympics, you've had you know, some of these smaller events the past couple weeks that the bigger guys haven't played in. So yeah, once you start going back and looking at you know, like, what was it? Was Russell Henley like the guy pulled up like his last two tournaments were the Open and the U.S. Open? Like, it's some of these guys you're drawing data. I mean, if you just did last eight rounds, it's going all the way back to the U.S. Open for Russell Henley. So, yeah, I think that's important to kind of break that stuff up a little bit more this week. I did a lot of the same.
Yeah, it's just, you know, something I think I've tried to put into my handicapping a little bit more this year. Yeah. Now, that being said, you know, I got a lot of seconds this year. I don't know. Yeah. So I got, like, maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe I'm wrong. So, you know, it's not certainly bearing fruit for me as much as it was in years past. But again, trying to evolve always and trying to figure things out and the best way to go about all of this. So, Wes, you know, look, we talk every week about approach. I know we all put that in there. We, you know, I'm sure all of us looked at kind of good drive stuff or total driving type stuff or things like that and whatever. But is there anything where you got a little funky in your modeling? Is there anything that you maybe emphasized a little bit heavier than maybe you think the market did, or maybe even de-emphasized more than the market?
Yeah, look, we're all going to have to emphasize approach, because most of the strokes you gain here are gonna be with the irons, or at least a plurality of them. In terms of driving, I didn't do a lot of like off the tee or distance. I focused a little bit more on the fairways gain and the good drives gain, because I don't think the distance is as important. You got 12 dog legs, you got narrow fairways, you got a lot of water, as I mentioned, a lot of fairway bunkers and, you know, penal rough. So you got to find the fairways here and keep it out of trouble. Proximity buckets I did just in context, and that's a wide range from 125 to 200. So separated those. I did a lot more scrambling than I thought I would here. Three of the last five winners, by the way, Glover, Abe Anser, and Brooks Koepka led the field in scrambling during their winning weeks here. So I did a little bit more scrambling than I thought I would. Strokes gained par four, 450 to 500, about half of the par fours measure that range. Did do some birdie or better. I usually use that. That's kind of like approach for a scoring stat. I'll use birdie or better every week, just guys that can steal the circles on the scorecard. Bogey avoidance, I weighted a little bit heavier though. So I did that this week because there's a lot of bogeys that'll lurk out there. Strokes gained putting Bermuda, even though these greens are not all that hard to putt on necessarily, but it could be what is the ultimate decider here. Mm-hmm. So use that at least very small.
Kelly, anything that you threw in or that you heavily emphasized or just kind of glanced over this week?
Pretty much everything Wes just said. I actually thought for me this was a pretty straightforward course to model. There are some things at this course that are pretty heavy outliers, right? Like we know this is one of the most approach heavy courses that you're going to get on tour. We got the second narrowest fairways with that water in play. So, I mean, it was heavy. I bet I was heavier than most off of looking off the tee stuff because just mainly, but focusing on accuracy, like Wes, mm-hmm. like Wes said. But it was a lot of that and approach stuff for me, different proximity ranges, opportunities gained, that sort of stuff. But then everything else that Wes mentioned as well. I think you need to look at birdies better and bogey avoidance. I also factored in bogey avoidance a little heavier than the birdies are better gained. Par fours I looked at, and then some around the green and scrambling as well. I saw those numbers too, Wes. I think that is interesting here because we do know that these guys are going to go pretty low this week. And usually when we're talking about courses like that, it's something I don't like to factor in as much, but I did just because we have seen that correlation before in the past.
Yeah. For me, I kind of good drive percentage, total driving, and just a tiny bit off the tee, a little bit more than I thought I would. And mainly because of just some of the stuff that I started to read from some of the players and some of the stuff that I heard from people that are already on the ground there that, you know, lots of rain coming through the southeast over the last couple of months, nice and humid, which gets that Bermuda nice and thick and gross and all of that. And it's kind of like if you get it into that, the rough, it's just going to be hard to control. It's not like these guys can all get it out of rough. I mean, like they swing so freaking hard that like whatever, it's just being able to control it out of the rough is the thing that they're worried about, being able to stop it on a green and all the stuff like that. And, you know, the worse the lie, obviously the bigger chance you have at flyers and different things and stuff like that, which can blow up a hole for these people. So I put a little bit more emphasis than I thought I would on that type of stuff. But outside of that, you know, again, just the kind of healthy blend of the baseline rounds, which I said I did a 36 and a 50, and then blending in, you know, the more recent type of stuff to see who's coming in a little bit hotter over the long haul. But at the end of the day, it's everybody trying to take down Scottie Scheffler. If you go over the last 36 rounds, he is second off the tee. He's first on approach. He is fourth around the green. He's first tee to green. He is first birdie a better percentage. He is first bogey avoidance. You know, if you go shorter approach, last 12 first to last 24 first, right? Good drive percentage second, opportunities gained first. I mean, literally the guy, it's not that he is good at all of this stuff. He leads the damn field in this, like heading into this in damn near every category. Right.
And so I punched in 11 data points. If I go back to my last 36, it's 11 different data points. He is number one in six of those 11.
Right. And he's no lower, and he's like no lower than like seventh or eighth in like the rest of them, just about.
Pretty much, yeah.
So it's just, you know, no surprise. I'm sure the same for y'all. Scottie Scheffler, number one in the model. It's like not even, you know, it's not even close. There's a value assigned to Scottie Scheffler in one of this. Like, so there's a value assigned to each player in each of the, you know, the different models that I run. The one over there that I'm looking at right now in the 36 model has a 96.7 value on Scotty. The second place person in that model is an 86.7. So again, just a massive discount between, you know, a decline, I should say, between Scotty and the next. And how about this? The 10th person in that model is Tommy Fleetwood. So you're still a top 10 in the model, whatever else of that. The value assigned to Tommy Fleetwood is 71.8. where Scotty's 96.7. It's just like that is the difference between Scotty basically and everybody else.
Break it down even more, Matt. What's the difference between Tommy Fleetwood and the absolute bottom guy on there?
Yeah, I mean, the absolute bottom guy's value is an 8.43.
Oh, okay. mm-hmm. thought I like, was thought I was setting this up. Well, apparently not.
Yeah. No, but I mean, but where you're going though is like, I know where you're going with this. It's like you can go all the way down to 50th, and again, there's only there's only 70 players in this field. You can go all the way down to 50th and the value assigned to that person is still a 50.24, right? So it's the same difference between Tommy at 10 and the 50th ranked guy than it is Scotty in the, whatever.
Better example. Yeah. There we go.
That's so it's just, it's pretty crazy when it comes down to all this. So, all right, Kelly, let's kick things off here with you, since you already said you only have one outright. So I'm sure your card as of right now of us recording this isn't all that robust. You said it was Colin Morikawa, but what else is going to be on the card for you?
Yeah, Morikawa outright. And you know, shop around prices. I played both Morikawa and just the true outright. I also played him in the winter without Scheffler market.
I also played the winter without market on Morikawa. Okay. Just for
I was able to get to a 14 to 1. I think it's mainly 12s, like you said, Matt, around. Mm-hmm. I think this was Caesars yesterday where I bet it at, and it was like they were hanging 12 to 1 on Morikawa, but then 11 to 1 in the winter without Scheffler market. So I think if you're looking at numbers like that, I think it's a no-brainer at this point with Scheffler. You're sacrificing that little. So I actually ended up playing both of those. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I did bet both. I think you can get into the argument of, you know, which is better if it is 14 to 1 versus 11 to 1. But at 12 to 1 versus 11 to 1, I think it's a no-brainer. Okay, next up then, the other guys that I did play in finishing position markets. Top 20s on, I played a top 10 heavy on Morikawa too. Mm-hmm. That's kind of been what I've been going back to with him and Xander seemingly all season long. So played top 10 on Morikawa as well. And then I played a top 10, top 20 on Tom Kim. I feel like we've all taken turns going back to Tom Kim here over the past couple months. But I mean, look, fairway finder, great, you know, has been great on approach. The stats all, you know, model out well for him. T24 and T13 here the last 2 years. He's had those up and down results recently. I mean, he was eighth at the Olympics, missed the cut at the Open, T15 at the Scottish, missed the cut at the Rocket Mortgage, but that was off that bad playoff loss at the Travelers to Scheffler. So he's had some up and down results, but the stats have really kind of stayed the same. And he was kind of my third favorite play this week. So played him in top 10, top 20. Guy who was my second favorite was Corey Connors. It's been a couple weeks of me betting Connors now. Look, I mean, if we're going to really get into a scramble game and around the green game, Connors probably ain't getting the job done. But what he's doing right now with the ball striking numbers and everything like there is really launching him up the board for me and where I've got him at in different models. And it's birdie and better. He's up there. He's scoring with all these guys as well. So been very consistent from that standpoint, putting his approach shots close to the pin last 24 rounds, fourth on opportunities gained and fourth on birdies or better gained. So like what I've seen out of Connors recently, just stayed in the top 20 market. We know there's only one course he can win at. So I'm just staying in the top 20 market with Connors. And then I played Tom Kim, I mentioned as well. Sungjae Im was the other one I did end up playing a top 20 on. Man, I feel like whenever I've bet Sungjae this year, I have not been right. So maybe tail that with caution if you are tailing out there. I also haven't bet him, I feel like, nearly as much this season as I have the past couple. He got off that little bit of a slow start. But you're talking T41 last week. T7 at the Open, T4 at the Scottish, T12 at the John Deere, T3 at the Travelers. He's put together a hell of a few tournaments going back the past couple months with a lot of top 10 finishes. Was T6 here last year, 12th in 2022. So good form at this course as well. Ended up playing him top 20. And then, no, I did not play him in a matchup. Top 20 just on Sungjae Im. And then a few tournament matchups for me. Tom Kim, I played over Russell Henley. I think Wes and I are head-to-head on a couple of these this week, actually. It's going to be fun. Tom Kim, I played over Russell Henley. Brian Harman over Jordan Spieth. And Tony Finau over Billy Horschel in the tournament matchups. And that is my whole card right now. Like I said, I'm going to listen to these fine gentlemen talk about their cards. I might add, but I have a feeling if I do, it's going to be pretty far down the board and take one or two long shots.
Wes, how did everything work out for you this week?
Yeah, look, I ended up on one long bomb, which I'll get to at the end, but didn't go too far down, Scotty and Xander. I went with Mr. FedEx Cup himself, Rory McIlroy, who's won three of these, and he's really the player that seemingly And maybe it's because of his longevity that like cares about this a little bit more than I think some of the other top end players. Like, this is a priority of his. I would like to see him maybe win another major before he worries too much about this. But look, outside of gagging away the U.S. Open, hasn't finished outside the top 15 since May. The Open Championship cut, I think, was he was on the bad side of the weather, and that happened to several players. Top five at the Canada, top five at the Scottish, top five at the Olympics, was actually in the mix for a medal, hit one in the water there late in the back nine. Third here last year on this course, just one stroke out of the playoff, which was Lucas Glover, and then the gentleman I will mention next. And I do think that he cares about the FedEx Cup. I will expect that he will be motivated here, even though this has probably been a big disappointment for a season for him. Another guy that's had a disappointing season is Patrick Cantlay, who was in that playoff with Lucas Glover here last year, 28-1. He has won FedEx Cup playoff events in two of the last three seasons, was the runner-up here to Glover last year. And look, he usually peaks this time of year. I think he's won three times in his last nine FedEx Cup playoff events, plus a runner-up, plus two more top tens. And he's seen his buddy Xander, who's his best pal on the tour, win two majors this year. So it's like, man, I got to keep up a little bit. Like, the stats don't indicate it for Cantlay, but it's going on kind of like some previous history that, you know, remember when Xander won the Olympic gold in Tokyo in 2021, and then Cantlay immediately won the FedEx Cup after that. So these guys kind of do play off each other, even though they're friendly. You know, there's competitiveness between the two, and I think you might see that out of Cantlay this week. Russell Henley, 35-1, was in the mix at Royal Troon, settled for a T5. Two top 10s here in Memphis in his career, including a six here last year. Kind of like Aaron Rye last week, and really this week for that matter, because he did pop on several categories for me this week. Henley's a guy that's a good fairway finder, keeps it out of trouble. I think he putts better on Bermuda than he does like Ben or any other putting surface. So Russell Henley, 35-1. Billy Horschel, just inside 50-1. Seventh last week at the Wyndham, he was cheering on his buddy Aaron Rye, who's actually his neighbor down there in Ponte Vedra Beach in Florida near the Jacksonville area. So he's cheered him on to his first PGA Tour win. Prior to last week, he was runner-up at the Open, best career major championship finish. And he's also won the FedEx Cup before, won it back in 2014. Remember, he won like two events in a row, ended up winning the FedEx Cup, four top tens last 10 years here in Memphis for Billy Horschel. And then the bomb, and it drifted all the way at circa to 170-1. But he was there on a lot of categories for me in the top 10. Austin Ekroat, who got his first PGA Tour career victory earlier this season at the Cognizant Classic at the PGA National, which I think some correlation here because there's a lot of water on that course. And you've got to really kind of place your shots and keep yourself out of trouble, because even though PGA National, the more difficult course, you can make big scores on both of them. Six last week at the Wyndham. That was his best finish since that tournament at PGA National. Fourth off the tee, six for driving accuracy last week. So Austin Ekroat, 170-1. I'll have some placement markets and some matchups up tomorrow at VSiN.com.
So interesting stuff, because it seems like we all kind of interpreted stuff a little bit differently this week, which is good because sometimes, you know, listen, we agree a lot, I think, on a lot of these things. So it's pretty good. So my biggest bet of the week is actually betting against Patrick Cantlay. I have a Hideki Matsuyama ticket against Cantlay. Matsuyama, actually the dog in that. Whenever I played it, but then you look at some of these sharper books around the world, and those odds are actually flipped around the country on those. I have Hideki inside the top 10 in every version of the model that I ran this week. Cantlay doesn't crack the top 30 in any of the different versions that I made. And I know that he last time out did okay, but I'm kind of going to go with the solid body of work here over the course of the season, in which I'm just going to assume that Hideki in his form is just going to be better than Cantlay in his form. And I only got to beat one guy. So with Hideki this week, that said, I did play Hideki in an outright as well, but just interesting. Because there's some things that, you know, I also ended up on Russell Henley like Wes did, which is weird, but then like I have completely different views of some of the other guys. Like, I was going to attack Billy Horschel this week. It's just weird. It's like yeah. we have some different stuff.
I think Horschel's probably a good conversation because I think of what he's done recent result wise. Like, I can't argue with that. I'm kind of betting though against him keeping it up. That's kind of where I'm at with Billy Horschel. I just don't know that I feel like he's at the point of his career where he can string this many good.
One of my reasonings for Horschel though is because he's a guy that tends to like get hot in spurts, and we've seen that in recent years. Like when he wins, he has another good finish or he puts a few together. And look, the numbers say that he might not put it together. So I'm kind of just going on previous history and, you know, maybe a guy having a really good attitude, seeing a guy that's become a good friend win. And then maybe that rubs off on him. So we'll see if that does that for Billy Horschel this week.
I usually like hating on the guy too, but man, it was nice to see last week with
you know, him, like him because he's a Gator run. Too. That probably has
maybe a little bit to do with it. Just a little bit to do with it, Wes. Yeah.
Kelly, a couple of guys you mentioned, I did. I ended up on a Tom Kim outright, not a placement market bet, but I did Tom Kim. I mean, listen, eighth overall in the 36 baseline. He is seventh overall.
Very high for me.
Yeah, seventh overall in the 50 round baseline. And there's just kind of a lot of parallels to the reason I bet him in the past, right? Like courses that emphasize more accuracy than distance, he can't really overpower all that much, I think just gives him a better shot against some of these guys. Now, again, it is very likely that Scotty or Xander, and maybe even you throw Rory into that equation, wins this tournament. Like there's just these guys don't, especially here this year. I mean, like Scotty just doesn't wilt under the pressure. Like he just doesn't do it. Xander is getting it done this year, you know, like, and so it's very tough. So I kind of an exotic thing that I did here. You have to find a book that allows you to parlay placement markets, but if you take Scotty and Xander and you place them in a parlay of top tens, you actually get plus money on that. And it's at a ties pay in full book with that as well. So Scotty Xander top 10 parlay actually comes out to plus money. And it would shock me if those guys lay an egg. The way that as consistent as both of those guys have been all year long, and we're only talking a top 10 too at this point. Like we're not even talking having to get into the top five, and it's ties paid in full. Have those guys that in there as well.
Plus 107 at DraftKings.
Yeah,
if you want to throw Rory in, you get up to plus 281.
Yeah. So just something there that I put into the account. The only other outright that I have, and you know, I'm a sucker, I guess, but it's just like
Birds.
No, I think the pricing finally got more appropriate and all of this. Like we've kind of seen the Ludwig slide a little bit, you know, and like now it's at least it's a 20 in front of his, you know, in front of his name. It's not, we're not getting the 14, 15, 16, 17, something like that with him. If you just look, his numbers are pretty comparable to all the top guys, except for his around the green stuff. And we saw that come and bite him in the ass whenever he ended up just choking that tournament away because he missed a few greens. And when he missed a few greens, he just chips horribly. Like he is just a very bad around the green player coming into this tournament. You look off the tee, approach, birdie or better, tee to green, all the stuff. It's just like, it lights up top five across the board, whatever, around the green. 61st out of 70 players in this field over the last 36 rounds for Ludwig. So I just need him to hit the greens. And hopefully he's not off the greens. And if that's the case, maybe we can get this home. But you know,
that's my Corey Connors approach. Don't be finding hit those greens and you should be okay this week.
Right. And which I did play a top 20 on Connors score, Kelly. So the Connors is in there as well. The only other two other bets in here, I'm going to ride the hot hand on Aaron Rye, but it's just going to be a top 20. It's still plus money on this guy. Again, top 20 and top 70 field. Nice course for guys that hit fairways. We know that's what he does in spades. Really good on approach as well. So I'll ride the hot hand here and think that he can finish in the top 20. I don't know about going back to back. I don't know if this field with the depth in this one, he can actually pull off a win, but certainly a top 20, I don't think he's asking too much. And it's still plus money on this guy to finish top 20. The only other one I have in here, I mentioned the Matsuyama over Cantlay head-to-head. I have Russell Henley over Cam Young, and that's actually a cheap one. It's only like minus 126 or something out there for Henley over Cam Young. Look, guys, we've all fallen victim to Cam Young, right? Like the talent, the everything, all the skill set is there. Like we get it. And we're just like, man, we're waiting on it. But the thing is here we are 4 years later, we're still waiting on it, you know? And it's just for me, Russell Henley has continually, we've seen this guy go out and get inside the top tens in these really tough field tournaments over and over and over again. And so in a head to head with Cam Young, I'm going to take Russell. And by the way, if we're looking just at the model, if we're just strictly off the numbers, the distance between Henley in the model and Cam Young is 27 positions, right? And like, I'm only paying 126 on Henley there. So big advantage for me there, just from a modeling aspect as well. So outright, so Ludwig, Tom Kim, Hideki, and Russell Henley, a Morikawa in the winner without market. Head-to-heads, Matsuyama over Cantlay, Henley over Cam Young. Top 20s on Rye, Connors, and oh, I didn't mention Finau, who, by the way, is plus money as well, top 20.
Yeah, Finau. I bet him in a matchup. I got really close to playing him top 20 there as well.
Yeah, yeah. Plus money on that, by the way. Mm. Like, again, in a 70-person field where ties pay in full. And then I did that Xander, Scotty top 10 parlay, which, again, also pays at plus money. Before we get out of here, guys, a couple of other people I think we at least need to mention as we go down. There are, you know, going to be people who are wondering, what about Victor Hovland? You know, what about some of these other guys that, you know, we every now and then with Tommy Fleetwood's going to rate out pretty high for a lot of people in models, et cetera, et cetera. For me, just not enough consistency from Vic this year for me to invest in him until I see it, you know, come to fruition. And then as far as Tommy, love the guy. Seems like an awesome dude. Seems like everybody loves him on tour. But again, win equity over here for whatever reason is just
I found that out again, having him too at the Olympics. By the way, he does have a third and a fourth here. Was third here last year, but the win equity, you know, certainly not there for this guy. But if you're a big form person, which I don't know if you really can be, because some of this is FedEx Cup events here, and some of this is like back in the mid 2010s, just, you know, your random FedEx St. Jude event that was in June. So you probably can't put too much stock into that.
Yeah, I would say, Matt, the two guys that my models are saying I should be playing that I'm kind of ignoring this week, it is definitely Tommy Fleetwood and then Aaron Rye.
Yeah, Fleetwood and Rye. Obviously, I got onto the top 20 with Rye, but I can't get there with Fleetwood. You know,
I can't get there either.
The price is very expensive for just a guy that, you know, for me, I can't do that. I guess the only other guy that my model's telling me to play that I am not is, weirdly enough, like Johnny Vegas rates out very high.
Like
Johnny Vegas is very high in the model. So I don't know. Maybe I'll try to pick off a head-to-head somewhere down the line if a good one pops up with him. But that's the only guy that the model's like, hey, dude, what are you doing? Like, you should be playing this guy.
I believe it was Circa. I hope I'm giving the right shout out here. I think Circa listed matchups for every single person in the field. So thought that was rather cool this week.
All right. Well, that's something I'll look at then. Yeah.
Only 70 players, but still, we rarely see that. So I'm pretty sure that was matchups for every single player.
Yeah, so we'll go in and anything we add, like we said, will be over at VSiN.com, VSiN.com/picks. Just become a VSiN Pro subscriber and you'll be able to go in and see each and every one of the picks that we put into play this week. Guys, off we go here to home stretch. You know, we'll be retiring at least this podcast in earnest. We'll still have podcasts throughout the course of the fall, but obviously football season will take some precedent with everything. But hey, we've got a few more good weeks of everything, a few more good weeks of some tournaments, and we'll certainly see if some of these guys can chase down what has been, just between Xander and Scotty's seasons this year, just unbelievable to have two guys have seasons like both these guys have had. And so, you know, see if they can go after those dudes.
As I said on Around the World, it has not been a banner betting year for me in the golf world, but thank God for the past 8 weeks. So let's hope it can keep running for a few more and dig a little bit further out of this hole. I know Wes has been hot too. He's over there nodding his head. So let's get a couple
more. Summer has been a lot better than the spring for
sure.
That's
right. Yeah.
All I can say is thank God for Akshay Bhatia in 72-1 at the beginning of the season. Because like, if it wasn't for that, it'd have been a rough one for me. There's no doubt about that. But listen, you hit a 72-1, you can get by on some rough weeks. Guys, this is absolutely free, this podcast. So please go ahead and hit that subscribe button. We do appreciate all the support out there. You can follow each and every one of us over on the Twitter machine as well. For Wes, for Kelly, I'm Matt. Good luck on all your FedEx bets.